Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily podcast on the Brooklyn Nets. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Keep the trunk blasting, toe tagging, I'm riding past them. Before you let them ride with the team, you got to ask them. Who got snaps on the Petro? Keep it real, don't front, yo.
Hello one, hello all, welcome to the Locked On Nets podcast, hosted by David Versberger as of right now. Today, I'm bringing you a sort of recap, a general outlook on the team, as well as their opponent after that Knicks-Nets game. And with me on the podcast was Jared Dubin of Locked On Knicks. And we have an interesting conversation, sort of go back and forth between the teams and storylines following them this season, so that's coming up in a bit, and if you enjoy it, please consider leaving a 5-star rating on iTunes. Really helps us out, and subscribe for future episodes. Now let's get to our talk with Jared Dubin of Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, Jared, we witnessed the latest chapter in the vaunted Knicks-Nets rivalry. Of course, one of the most heated, I can't even say it with a straight face. that was an interesting game.
I would say that the Knicks-Nets rivalry is the most heated rivalry in the history of New York professional basketball.
Easily. I can't think of, well, you know what, maybe in my lifetime, because as people know, I'm 11 years old, so.
And the Nets were the New York Nets earlier, so.
Yeah, exactly. But this game, we kind of saw what the Nets have been doing to teams in those first three quarters, which is catching them completely off guard with actually pretty good basketball, which not a lot of people expected from Brooklyn. And then the Knicks just sort of blew them out from there. As far as, like, what happened in the game, like, how it was sort of, how it came to be that the Knicks ended up winning, I think that basically sums it up. The Knicks couldn't really defend, and I heard Hornacek sort of laid into them at halftime. They stepped it up, and, you know, Brooklyn's without basically all of their point guards. They don't have Jeremy Lin, and they don't really have a ton of talent to begin with, but they've been keeping in these games by running a pretty good defensive scheme, shooting a lot of threes, really playing to their guys' strengths. Atkinson's been doing a good job, and these guys have stepped up, and they've been trying hard, and we saw that in the beginning, but the Knicks have Carmelo Anthony and Kristaps Porzingis and Derrick Rose and guys the Nets do not have, so I feel like that sort of just sort of stole the game at the end of things.
Yeah, I think it's sort of, it may have even just been the first quarter where the Nets really, really outplayed the Knicks. Because if you look at the scoring margin from each quarter, the Nets won the first quarter by 10. The Knicks won the other three quarters. The second quarter did seem like a continuation of that first because the Knicks' defense was still not on point. But by that point, they got their offense going a little bit and scored 31 points in the second quarter. You know, where they really changed the tenor of the game, I think, was still in the third, where they started locking down defensively. You know, they only let up 16 points in that third quarter, and that allowed them to, I believe, take the lead by the end of the third. I think they were up by one at the end of the third quarter, took the lead like midway through the third or so. So to me, it was not so much about the Nets outplaying them for three quarters as they outplayed them very badly in the first and were getting basically any shot they wanted, and were able to hold on to that lead that they created in the first quarter until the Knicks locked down defensively, which started happening mostly in the third.
Right, and you know, I think you're probably following the Knicks a little more closely than I am this year, but the defense has clearly been the problem. I think until yesterday, they were the worst defensive team in the league.
Yep.
When you look at points per 100 possessions. Does this instill much confidence, given that these are the Nets?
Certainly the second half was encouraging. Like, you can't say that it's not. You know, they let up only 41 points after halftime. I think they held the Nets to something like 27.5% shooting. Yeah, they were 11 of 40 from the floor in the second half, and also turned it over 10 times. So all of that together is definitely encouraging. You know, that said, it is the Nets, and they did get blasted in the first half. You know, they let up 55 points in the first half, and the Nets shot 55% from the field. So it's not like this was a complete defensive game. You know, there are still obviously things to work on. They had a bunch of different breakdowns that we've been seeing throughout the season so far in the first half. They let the Nets take 16 threes in the first half. You know, they made six, which is, you know, a pretty good percentage. But if you leave guys open as often as they were, sometimes they'll hit more, sometimes they'll hit less. The bigger thing, I think, was that they kept giving up layups. You know, it was too easy for the Nets to get open shots near the basket in the first half. And I think that's where they really locked down after halftime. And that was definitely encouraging to see. Some of that was going smaller, so they were able to be more flexible defensively. I think you saw that particularly with the bench guys that came in that were all sort of like-sized with Endor and Kuzminskis and even Vujicic, who I thought played pretty good defense. You know, that group I thought played very well together. And, not Endor. It was Kuzminskis, Vujicic, Jennings, and Hernan Gomez that were out there together.
Right.
I thought that group did really well in the second half.
Yeah, you gotta chase the Nets off the 3-point line. Thought the Knicks did a better job of that a little later in the game, but even Justin Hamilton went off in like those first two quarters, I want to say, but like he wasn't even that open for a lot of them. He was just torching the Knicks, and you know the Nets are gonna shoot a lot of threes, but you look at the shooters on the team; they're all pretty streaky. They're here and there,
yep.
Like Sean Kilpatrick, Bojan Bogdanovic, Justin Hamilton. They can go off like we saw, you know, in the first half, which wasn't even going off, actually. It was just a pretty good, you know.
Bogdanovic, I think, in the first quarter, I think he had 6 points, two rebounds, two assists in the first quarter, and I'm pretty sure that's what he ended up with for the game. So, you know, him in particular, I thought they did a good job of running off the line and keeping away from his hot areas, particularly once he got off to that good start. You know, they didn't do as good a job, I think, tracking Hamilton. You know, he still wound up, I think he made five threes on the night. They let him get out there a little bit. And that's been, that type of player has been challenging for them this year. You know, sort of the stretch four type of guy who can step out and hit threes. You know, that's been consistent throughout the season. And, you know, it's a little bit surprising that he was the guy to do it. But he does apparently have that tool in his bag this year. And that's something they're going to have to deal with all season, is guys that play like that.
Yeah, Hamilton was getting a little free on those pick and pops. And, you know, you guys like Porzingis and Noah, I wouldn't classify them as bad defenders at all. It's just like they're not the most mobile guys to be chasing around these shooters. And you mentioned Bogdanovic. I think a real key to defending the Nets is making those wings into creators more than just spot-up guys and giving them the shots they like. You really want them to try and have to start offense on their own because Kilpatrick, Hollis Jefferson, Bogdanovic. You know, Bogdanovic is known as a scorer, but he's really not that much of a guy in the NBA where you can give him the ball and say, hey, go run out of the pick and roll. Go create a good look for our team.
Right.
He's one of the best ball handlers. These aren't... It's really like the guy who really starts it all with the Nets offense is Jeremy Lin, and he's been absent, and he's going to be for a little while.
Bogdanovic and even to a certain extent Kilpatrick are not so much scorers as they are shooters, and if you live inside their jersey and make them put it on the ground, not to dribble into another jumper, but to put it on the ground and have to either go to the basket or create for somebody else, that's where you can stop them from getting what they want. If you're giving them free looks, or if you're blowing by them on closeouts and letting them take a dribble in or a dribble to the side and put it up, then you're doing what they want. But if you stay under control and just live inside their jersey and make them put it on the floor to get past you, which I think the Knicks did a very good job of with those guys in particular after the first quarter or so. That's how you can sort of short-circuit this offense without somebody like Lynn in there whose strength is getting into the paint and creating the opportunities for those guys to do the shooting that they like to do.
Which is why I'm so surprised that Lynn, without Lynn, the Nets have had a pretty good offense as of late. But to flip it around, you know, the Knicks sort of went on this mini late run. I'm trying to remember when, but Porzingis was hitting some threes. The Nets have this thing in their defensive system. I think Atkinson brought it over from Atlanta, and Atlanta has these athletes that can scramble the floor and really trap guys. I got to look at the film to see exactly when they want to do it, but it seems like when the ball handler in a pick and roll is around the elbow area outside the arc, the Nets trap that, and you know, it becomes a 4-on-3, one pass away there, and teams have sort of figured out that when the Nets go to that, a quick pass, and then suddenly you can find an open corner shooter. And it was actually Porzingis usually at the top of the key that the Knicks found on that night. And I remember Charlotte in an earlier game in the fourth quarter basically just saw the Nets doing this and were able to pick apart that defense super quickly because they knew exactly what the Nets were going to do. So I wonder if Atkinson's going to adjust that scheme a little bit going forward, because the Nets don't exactly have the athletes and sort of just the on-the-spot thinking to really to read that situation and be able to defend 3-on-4. That's something like LeBron's Heat did well, but you know, this isn't that, obviously.
Yeah, I think it sort of depends who that screener is. You know, if it's somebody who is not a high-level shooter and is more likely to try to attack the basket, that can work fairly well. But when you're trapping them and it's Kristaps popping out, then it could hurt you. And I think it definitely did in the second half. I think it was in the third or the fourth quarter. But either way, that hurt them. But I think the thing that really sort of changed the game was just Carmelo making shots one-on-one with guys right in his grill. He made 4 or 5 of them in a row in the third quarter. And it came after a sequence where the Knicks had been moving the ball really well and just not knocking down the shots that resulted from that ball movement. And then Carmelo just sort of went to work and brought the Knicks back. I think he may have put them into the lead, but if he didn't, it was pretty close. And then at that point, the ball movement again took over from there when the European guys all came in together and they started really getting pretty much whatever look they wanted on that end. While still playing defense on the other. But it was that streak of Carmelo makes that really saved them from falling further behind while they were playing better and getting themselves back into the game.
Yeah, watching that streak, I thought back to this tweet I sent out, I think a couple of weeks ago, saying that when Carmelo's hot, he's still one of the most fun scorers to watch do his thing in the NBA. And that was really fun to watch. I mean, he was just torching. Bogdanovic, he often finds himself on a good offensive player defensively. Like, I think he's a good team defender, system defender maybe, but guys can really just go off on Bogdanovic. I want to ask you this. With Hornacek's sort of bench rotation, it seems like it's been really sporadic, really all over the place. Do you think tonight sort of brought the Knicks a little closer to maybe what do you like to see in a consistent rotation as far as what bench guys are coming in and when?
I think it's possible. You know, this is something that we talked about on a podcast before the season where Kyle O'Quinn was going to have a backup center job to start the year, and he was going to play well for a few games, and then he was going to start doing Kyle O'Quinn things and not playing all that well. And they were going to give Hernan Gomez a chance. And if there was a game where he played really well, it was possible that he would take it over. And that is exactly what happened last night. He scored 14 points and had 6 rebounds all in the second half. Blocked a couple shots, looked much better defensively in this game, I thought, than he's looked at any time since he's been with the team, you know, over the summer, during preseason, whenever. He didn't play over the summer. So during preseason or in the early part of the season, I thought that his defense was much better last night than it had been before that. And he was getting tip-ins. He was moving well offensively and working in connection with Jennings and with Porzingis. which is, you know, a way that he's comfortable, you know, working off of Porzingis because they did play together in Spain. And that combination, I thought, looked very good. So, I do think it's possible that he earned himself more minutes just by playing really well in that second half and impacting the game in a way that I don't think O'Quinn has so far this season. Whether guys like Kuzminskis and Vujicic took rotation spots from, you know, Justin Holiday and maybe Endor or Lance Thomas, I'm a little bit more skeptical, but that group did show something together. You know, the Euro group of Jennings, who obviously played in Europe for a year before he came to the NBA, Sasha, Kuzminskis, Kristaps, and Hernan Gomez. So I wouldn't be surprised if they went back to it to see if it was more than just a lightning in the bottle kind of thing.
I absolutely love the chemistry Jennings and Porzingis have. They really look in sync together on the court, despite being on this team, you know, a short period of time. I don't know if you see the same thing. It feels like whenever they're in a pick and pop together, pick and roll, even in like semi-transition, they're looking for each other. It's pretty awesome out there.
Yeah, I mean, that was something that, again, was, I think, easily predictable in preseason. The way their skill sets mesh together makes a good degree of sense. You know, Jennings loves to come around that screen and really attack while at the same time looking up for somebody. You know, Rose is more of an attacker that once he puts his head down, it's more often than not that he's going to the basket. He has done a better job over the last couple games of keeping his head up and looking for somebody, but Jennings is more naturally inclined to do that. And the space that he's provided by the fact that Kristaps is such a good shooter, you know, it works well for both of them. And you saw particularly, I think, in the fourth quarter where Jennings drove left around a Kristaps screen and looked outside for him, and the defender sort of ran past Kristaps, and then he cut into the lane and got a huge dunk for an and-one. You know, they're able to adjust when that pick and pop isn't just wide open right away, which is a nice sign to see. And just Jennings in particular, I thought this was one of the best games I've seen him play in his whole career. And he scored,
what, he had like 11 assists?
He had 11 assists. I think he had 4 or 5 rebounds. And he only had 3 points. So I was really, really impressed with the way he played.
I'm sort of trying to think of maybe what this game, like, it's one of 82, but what this game sort of means for both teams going forward. And with the Knicks all falling back, it was like they needed one of these wins, just the defense looking a little better. Even if the Nets aren't any slouches, you know, they've been competing with teams, so I think this is pretty good for the Knicks, just as a way to actually get a W and see their defense working out there. And for the Nets, I mean, this is just another team they've been competitive with that a lot of people expected they wouldn't be with. I don't think this sort of moves the needle on the Nets much, but without any point guards, really, they got off to a good start, sort of held on to it a bit. And even when the Knicks pulled away, I wouldn't call it a true blowout. I mean, it was just the Knicks sort of outplayed them the rest of the way and, you know, got in a little run to finish them off. But the Nets have only really gotten blown out once, I believe, which is the Chicago game. And unless you count Boston, in which they came back from 23 down in the fourth, which is, you know, it might have been a little anomaly, but the Nets have really been sticking with teams.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that it was, for the Nets, it was just another game where they were competitive, and that's all you can ask for from them this season. Like, just be competitive and figure out what you have on a night-to-night basis, who works well together, who doesn't, who should be part of the team for the future, who is expendable, things like that. And that's, I thought, you know, basically what happened. You know, they got out to a good start and they couldn't hold on to it. It's not that big a deal in the grand scheme of things. For the Knicks, I think it was definitely important that, you know, they get a win that against a team that they should beat, which, you know, the Nets qualify as, and they did that. I think it was important that their defense turn around a little bit, and they did that certainly in the second half. You know, but now they have to keep it going, and the schedule for them is tough through the rest of the month. You know, they have the Celtics tomorrow and then the Raptors the next day, You know, they do get the Mavericks next week, but they play the Pistons, the Wizards, the Hawks, the Blazers, the Hornets twice, the Thunder, the Wolves twice. That's between now and December 2nd. You know, things aren't getting easy anytime soon. So they have to keep these things up and not just say, okay, we're good now. You know, the defensive effort that was there in the second half and the cohesion they showed for the most part offensively in the second half, with the exception of that stretch where they just sort of leaned on Melo to get them back into it, which, you know, was necessary, but is not really an ideal way for them to be playing. They have to keep those things going. It can't just be a thing where it shows up for one game and you expect that it's good now, which they've done, you know, twice before this season. They need to keep that stuff. They need to take that and build on it. And that's the biggest thing that comes out of it for me.
The contrast is really funny because the Nets have very little talent, but always commit to the scheme every night and try their asses off, and that's how they stay in games. The Knicks have all the talent on paper, but we've seen sort of an inconsistency in how they're approaching games and just, you know, what kind of things they're running out there. I mean, against Chicago, you saw them sort of ditch the strict triangle a bit and just free roll with the pick and roll. And we saw a little bit of that tonight, actually, with that Euro group. And you just saw them go off on offense and do pretty well defensively. You know, some other nights you see them, even in the first quarter tonight, I thought the Knicks really resorted back to last year's strict mechanical triangle.
Yeah, they ran more triangle in that first quarter than they had in the previous, like, three games, probably.
Yeah, and it was just mechanical and predictable. I mean, the Nets knew what they were trying to do, and it just ended up in a stagnant ISO most of the time. And, you know, the Nets fed off that. Let me ask you, as a sort of outsider's perspective on this Nets team, who's really impressed you? Just looking at this game and maybe any of the Nets games you've catched this year, any surprises?
I mean, I still like Hollis Jefferson as a player. I don't know that he's necessarily played as well as you would want him to, but I think that there is a player inside that skill set, which, again, is, you know, what you're looking for if you're the Nets to me. I don't know if Hamilton has played this way the whole season. I don't think he has, but that display he put on last night was very impressive to me. Kilpatrick, I think, has shown that he's a player as well. Did not shoot well last night, and I think, you know, it's a large part because of the reasons we talked about before. He's not a guy who's going to be a point guard and run the offense or right, even necessarily consistently create his own looks. But I do think, for a second,
yeah. I actually talked to his college coach, Mick Cronin, today, and he said that, you know, if you told him 5 or 6 years ago that Sean Kilpatrick would be playing point guard, starting point guard in the NBA, he'd call you crazy.
Yeah.
So you can see where it's at now.
Yeah, and look, Brook Lopez, obviously, I think, has been really impressive this year, too.
Absolutely.
He's still so good, and I think very underrated because he's not a traditional center, and he's not a new wave center. He's just good at what he does, which is something that not all that many people do anymore. But I think he's been very good, and he's certainly, I think, with the adding threes to his game, has opened things up a little bit as well, and that's only a good thing for them.
Oh, yeah. And I wanted to talk about Porzingis because I've loved his season so much so that coming into the season, I thought with the Knicks, okay, I see what they're doing. They want to maximize having Melo, and they want to see if they can sort of run out his contract while competing, and it'd be a good environment for Kristaps because he'd learn from Joakim Noah, and he'd be on a competitive team. You know, he wouldn't be on a Sixers. And now all in my head is like, God, why can't this just be Kristaps' team already?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's shown, I think, through these first couple weeks of the season that at worst, he's the team's second best player. And, you know, you want to find a way to maximize that. I don't know if they'll be able to do it on an every night basis. And I think you've seen that already throughout this young part of the season. But they do have to find a way to make it happen consistently. You know, certainly I think Offensively, he's been every bit of everything that you could ask for from him. What I would like to see is a return of last season's defensive abilities, because he has flat out not been good on that end so far. Not, you know, worse than he's been last year. He's just not been good on that side of the ball, whether it's on the interior or when he's been forced to guard on the perimeter. And that's not encouraging. So I would like to see him get back to the way he played last year on that side of the floor.
Yeah, that's been weird, because I understand if the perimeter defense hasn't come along the way it has. I mean, it's hard. You're 7'2 guarding a 6'7 a small forward playing power forward. Like, that's difficult. But it seems like he's defending more with his hands. Even on the interior, he's trying to reach. He's jumping out maybe a little too much. I think that's I'm not worried about his offense at all. Like, watching him on offense, I know less and less of what he actually should be, because he can just do so much that I'm just thinking of all these different ways you can utilize him. Like, is he a straight pick-and-pop, pick-and-roll guy that can just demolish teams with if he has a good point guard partner? Yeah, but, like, he's showing these low post moves and things like that. But, again, I'm not worried about that. That those are all just really good signs. Defensively, you know, I thought coming in, the real thing I wanted to see from him was cutting down on those rookie mistakes, closing out a little better. He's really struggled with that. It hasn't looked good. I mean, you know, there's obviously this is a long-term thing. You got to be patient with a 21,
yeah.
21-year-old, you know, 7'2 guy trying to defend perimeter NBA players. It'll take some time, but I'm not too worried. It is a rough start to the season defensively for him, but I think if he goes back to sort of less hunting down the big blocks, more just, you know, playing vertical, getting into position, and working on... He doesn't have to stop guys on the perimeter yet. I think he needs to work on closing out without leaving his feet or fouling. And, you know, less of the... He's reached in and gambled a lot, which is weird. I didn't expect that.
Yeah, I agree with all of that, and I think it's especially noticeable when, you know, you see some plays where he just sort of lets himself stand there and be big, and he can still have an impact on shots, and he needs to jump less, basically, is I think a lot what it comes down to. Like, you see the Spurs, they're so good defensively, and they rarely ever jump, because all jumping does a lot of the time is put you out of position. You know, he's 7'3", and his arms are massive. He doesn't need to jump. Like, I feel like they should have him practice sometimes where he's not allowed to jump on defense, just to show him what kind of impact he can have just by being big. And I think that would do a lot to help him. You know, I'm not worried about his defensive development, you know, just based on his size and length and his general mobility. I still expect that he'll be a plus defender for a long time, but there certainly have been some early season concerns, and I think that that's really all that they are, is early season concerns, and he should be able to, you know, hammer those mistakes out of his game as the year goes on.
I love that you brought up the not jumping. I'm just imagining a coach coming out to him like, just Kristaps, you're 7'3". you have like a 20-foot wingspan. You do not need to jump. Like, just put some men like cinder blocks on his kicks when he's defending the paint, and when you're good.
Yep. That would be nice. Not cinder blocks. You want him to be able to move, but just, you don't have to jump. You know? That's it.
Yeah.
That's as good a place as any, I think, to wrap up.
Don't jump, kids. Jumping's bad for you.
Don't jump. Let me get it one time. Fake the fuck. Keep it real. Don't fake the fuck. Let me see them heads high.